This is the Hard Truth, Tony Schaefer, powered by 6 Hour Never Settle. I had a choice of what I carried in combat. I always carried the best. I recommend you carry the best. The best is 6 Hour Never Settle. In a world of difficult and challenging issues, we choose to be with those who are able to help individuals thrive and survive. So 6 Hour is a choice that I make. I believe you should make the same choice, Never Settle. Also, another group that actually helps Americans help themselves, Swiss America. Call and get a free copy of their brochure, The Secret War on Cash, the newsletter that actually explains all this, 800-289-2646. Again, 800-289-2646. Tell them Tony Schaefer sent you. It'll help you help yourself and be prepared for hard times. So today we are joined by an old friend and also a new friend, because they've been working to protect a whistleblower who's been in the news, not as much as I would have thought. Captain Tim Nick testified in front of Congress recently regarding some of the failures and I think factual inaccuracies of the 6th January events. So we're joined by my dear old friend, Dan Meyer. I'm sorry, I'm having a senior moment. Dan, good morning. Thank you for being on with us. And also with his colleague from Tully Rickney Lawyers, also joining us is Lachlan McKinnon. Did I get that right? Lachlan McKinnon. Thank you. Thank you for the correction. So thank you both for being here. And full disclosure, Dan was one of the investigators on my issue called Able Danger. It was an issue that I formally made allegations against senior DOD leadership to their inability or inaction regarding pre-9/11 intelligence. So that's the framework which we go back on. And Dan has been around. Dan's done all sorts of good things. And he was a good guy in my case. He's a good guy now, standing up for Captain Nick. So let's start with kind of the picture of where we're at. So your client, Captain Nick, testified. A lot of people have seen it. I was actually on Timcast IRL last night, a major blog that does issues relating to millennials. We talked about this a bit. And let me ask you, I guess I'll start with Lachlan. Lachlan, do you believe that your client was fully justified having to break ranks and come forward and say, hey, the facts as they've been essentially put out publicly are not accurate? Do you believe your client really had the need to do that?
I think absolutely. And I think we do this with a lot of whistleblowers. It's really a matter of principle. You know, they want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
They want to come out. They want to speak the truth. Throughout this whole process, even going back to the January 6th Select Committee, they never interviewed him. They never spoke with him. And he was the personal assistant to the commanding general. And you would think if they wanted to speak with anyone to get the actual facts of what happened, they would want to speak with him, at least interviews, emails, his notes. They didn't come after him at all.
So, Dan, over to you then, because it sounds like deja vu all over again. I can swear that we had provided a specific list of potential witnesses to look at certain things we were saying. For example, let me bring up a blast from the past, a book, Horse Soldiers, which was made into the movie 12 Strong. And we, in the book, this is before we testified, by the way, it talks about a general named Jeffrey Lambert, 2-star general, who actually acknowledges in the book that they knew on 9/11, the bell had just been rung. And then he goes and talks about a top secret intelligence program called data mining that identified one man, an Egyptian named Muhammad Atta, who was the leader that he was briefed on before 9/11. It's in the book. And Dan, we said, go talk to Lambert. They wouldn't talk to Lambert. It seems like deja vu all over again.
So we'll do a little, we'll go back to our collegiate days and do a compare and contrast as the essay question said. Tony, as you remember, in your experience, there was a split. And this is always the exciting development in federal whistleblower law, when, for instance, the Defense Intelligence Agency takes one position and the United States Army takes another. And that was in your case.
Yeah.
In in Tim's case, he has not broken ranks. This is what absolutely fascinated me in the hearing last week, is that Tim, his command general, the command general's deputy, and other senior officers way higher than Tim's pay grade, all within the DC Guard, are of one observation, and that is that the Secretary of the Army never gave the order to deploy the Guard to protect the Capitol. And wow. As you know, yeah, that 2.5 hour delay, you know, you can go through the chronology and see what happened, but
right.
You know, people died in that time period.
Right.
So he hasn't broken ranks in that regard.
That's good.
As I would say, you really did not break ranks with the Army. DIA, probably a different story.
No, they told me to do it. No, I mean, the Army was all for it. Right.
And then the other part of this that really reverberates through your experience, and then another person I'm sure you know about, David Tenenbaum, who was a Army engineer. His case came through your office after your case went through. Is the whole role of the Defense Department's Office of Inspector General, of which I am a veteran. I enjoyed yes. my time in the DOD Inspector General's office. I learned more about the operation of the federal government than I think I really care to know. And the challenge now becomes is that the DODIG has taken sides with the Secretary of the Army against the DC Guard. They've weighed in, and they weighed in having done what's called a review. And as I had to explain to the staff, you know, don't call a review an investigation. When somebody tells you they're going to do a review, they're telling you they're going to do a half effort at best. And what they end up doing in the half effort is they don't call all the appropriate witnesses. They call some witnesses multiple times and hope to get them to change their testimony. I've seen that little trick play.
Oh, yeah, we went through that. Yeah.
Yeah, they round language, you know, and an investigator comes in with really sharp, tough, hard-hitting language, and then a group of SESs get together and, oh, we need to change which to that and is to was and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And by the time you get to the end of the report, you're asleep. You know, you've forgotten what the original finding was. They do reverse engineering, Tony. They come in and they say, okay, we know what happened here. Let's go out and find the facts to show what happened. And then you select this right. witness, not that witness. You look at that document, not this document. There's a whole bag of tricks that can be used. And the question you got to go to, it's the current Washington version of the Watergate phrase, follow the money. You got to ask why it's going on, because people don't go to this length of obfuscation unless there's some interest in it. They're trying to get in with this crowd or get out with that crowd. There's some sort of Washington inside the baseball game that is being played, which has nothing to do with the advertised reason for whatever the IG is doing. In your case, right. It was, did we know the identity of Mohammed Atta prior to 9/11? Was this the, you know, the Roosevelt knew the Japs were coming at Pearl Harbor moment of my generation? In the case of Tim Nick, did we fail to deploy the Guard? And if we failed, was it just bad management, poor leadership, or was there some reason behind it? And that's right. where the committees are up on the Hill trying to figure this going forward.
Well, see, that's the key, is that it's always that predicate of something else, Dan. I mean, I was in the green room when this all started back in 2004 with Trent Lott. And Trent Lott looked across the green room at me and says, Colonel Schaefer, I've been watching you going through your whistleblowing, and can I make two comments? And I looked at him as like, sure, Senator, say whatever you want. He says, well, first off, I got, there's two lessons you're going to learn. He said, the first lesson is it's never good to be right ahead of time in this town. It's like, yeah, no, I know that. You can't be right on something if it goes against the common ground. The second thing he said, Tony, you're going to come to learn that whatever they're talking about publicly, the issue is something else entirely every time. So to your point, Dan, Trent Lott told me that in the green room. It's like, yeah, whatever it is, it's something else. So I guess that's where I'm going to go with this next, is it's something else. Because for my thing, for Able Danger, and people can go back and check it out. My testimony in front of the committees is on the internet. Again, Dan was an amazing, we weren't friends at the time. You were an investigator. And I guess I could say, could I say this? You called me one day out of the blue and you said, hey, you were doing like senior executive level work. You were doing all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, it's like, well, you were like, you were just making decisions and doing things. Like, yeah, that's, I was doing that. I was told to go do things. And at the time, I think you were shocked. And of course, I didn't understand why that was so extraordinary at the time, because I found out later, Dan, they don't normally give GS-14s that level of authority just to go do things, which I was just like, yeah, go do things. And I was doing it. So I think you were rightly like, how did you do all this? Like, I just did it. I mean, I don't know what you want to say. Because I actually asked you, he's like, well, did I break any rules? And he's like, well, no, not really. It's just you were doing things, you know?
Well, Tony, though, that's a very important observation, because there's a common theme through many of these cases in there. We find it hardest to document the performance of the government, which is what all of this is about, right? This is all about how the government does its mission. Your case, David Tenenbaum's case, Tim Nick's case, the Iowa explosion that I was a part of as a junior officer.
I was going to bring it up if you didn't mind. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about how we document the performance of the government, and where you're in an environment where the rules have changed or the institutions are taxed, that's when what I regard as heroic people step forward and do their job. And they go to the limit of the authority they know they have. And it's surprising, because all of a sudden you find out that a GS-14 is doing SES level work. The problem is when that goes forward and the mission gets done, all the people who are supposed to be doing that work, all the, what my father used to call the political officers up inside the Beltway, the people who advance their careers by pouring coffee, not by driving submarines and harassing Russian attack subs. Those people, the political officers, then feel threatened, because all of a sudden there's an example out there. There's a ruler. There's a yardstick to see how people should be performing. And while you were out getting the job done, somebody was, you know, scratching anatomy back in D.C. and not really getting the job done. And that, you know, David Tenenbaum's case, a classic example. The guy was traumatized by soldiers getting injured by IEDs, and he just went forward and got it done. In fact, he did get it done. He's talked to people who have lived because of the improvements that he forced on the Army and eventually the Marine Corps. But they went after him with abandon out there in Michigan because, you know, as Donald Rumsfeld said, we go to war with the Army we have. And the Army we had was really inadequate for a lot of the wrong reasons, because people should have known.
So I'm glad you brought up Don Rumsfeld, because Don is a common element in our story, not in your story with Captain Nick, but ours. So, and that's where I was going to go with this next. The whole issue of Able Danger, maybe this is true with your client too, and I'll find out in a second, but it went from the big picture of, oh my goodness, we actually had Special Operations Command leaning forward with a team, a hybrid team of special operations folks from the tiered units and DIA, and using advanced technology to target bad guys, to, oh, data mining, and it didn't work. It was like this MacGuffin over here to the side. They tried to divert attention from the big picture, to your point, over here to this little, oh, it's just data mining. It was an experiment, because it to distract from the fact that, gee, maybe we would have been able to take these guys out. And to your point, who benefited or didn't want to benefit is DOD. DOD did not want to take the L for 9/11. So that's why I think they went after me. It's like, to your point, bureaucrats didn't like me because I was doing my job. And secondly, and I think more importantly, DOD did not want the loss. So Don Rumsfeld, speaking of Don actually made public comments regarding my issue at the time. I don't think you guys interviewed him. But Dan, years later, I was in the green room on a 9/11 anniversary with him at Fox. And I look over at Rumsfeld and I say, you know, Mr. Secretary, there's something that stands between us. And he looked at me and says, yeah, Able Danger. He knew, Dan. He knew Able Danger. He said it to me. And I said, And I said, yeah, I know. It's like, I'm sitting there. It's like, holy cow. So I'm sitting there and he said, it looks at me, you know how Don is. He says, yeah, Tony, why is that? Why is there an issue between us? He put it back on me. And it's like, and I looked at him, I said, because you were lied to. Because whatever they told you about what I was doing and what was going on was a lie. And he took it. He didn't get upset with me. And he looked at me. Now, this is where I want your comment, Dan. He looked at me and says, well, Abel Danger wasn't the only thing they lied to me about, unquote. So do you think Don is being sincere? Because this circles back to John Crane saying DOD lawyers told him what to put in his final report regarding me, which then overwhelmed what you wanted to say, too. Just ask it. So that's a complex question, but I think one you can handle based on your knowledge.
Well, yeah, and then this brings us to, and this is not weeds, this is the reverse of weeds, or you're up in the clouds. You can't understand the way you were treated on Abel Danger or the way Tim is going to be treated. And I've told Tim, Nick, that, you know, this could be the beginning of a very rocky path unless you understand right. The run-up to the incident. And what everybody forgets is that the Cold War ended, and we all went off into snow baby land, right? We all went off into Care Bear country. We all thought that, you know, the national security threat had lapsed. And what my team in and around DC, the men and women who mentored me, this is now almost 40 years ago, were telling me after the Cold War ended that the bad guys were only just beginning to come of age. And the one sociological observation that was made time and time again in all these think tanks is that we have a whole generation of non-Israeli, they used to use this term, non-Israeli young men in the Middle East with high educations and absolutely zero job prospects, right? The economy never moved off oil. They didn't develop into, you know, the Ruhr Valley of the Middle East. And so all of these people were ripe for the picking for the Muslim extremists who, after 1979, got going. And we kind of sat around in Washington. We didn't do much of anything about that, even though all the different approaches were mapped out. So then you have 9/11 happen, and it wasn't like a fall of China in 1949, which was right. Thousands of miles away. It was in New York City and Washington, D.C., and everybody wanted to hang somebody for what had happened. And I, you know, my view, because I come out of a Navy family, dad was a submariner. If you had an incident on your boat, your career was over. It was zero tolerance for right. Fires and trash cans or any sort of the thing. So there was none of this sort of let's go soft and let's think about it in terms of how the person was raised, what experiences they had in life. No, we had absolute standards. And if they got violated and you were in charge, you got your can kicked. And that stopped sometime in the 1990s. And everybody was more worried about how they were going to be viewed up against the events in the past. That is the environment that I think. And I was really shocked when John Crane came out and made the statement he did. He was my boss and I wasn't a part of that inner circle discussion. And when John made that statement, you know, I was like, wow, this really was pull the wool over the old man's eyes and get him to go along. But the motivation for that is that nobody wanted to be on the other side of the blaming finger. And think about it with January 6th, right? There's a certain narrative now that's taken hold. And it's now in a lot of people's interest for that story to stay the same. And along comes the DC Guard right. leadership, of which my client is the most junior member, I'll point out. And they say, no, that's not why it happened. And in this environment, inspectors general have to be very, very careful. It's the worst place to go if you want to work somewhere else in Washington. I've never known a departing inspector general to get a job worthy of what they did as the IG, because if you're doing your job correctly, everybody will hate you by the time you come to the end of your job. And so going into an IG position, and this is the same if you're the CIA IG, that's reminding me of something fairly recent. or if you're the DOD IG or the NSA IG, going into those inspector general positions, trying to please people, it's a nightmare, because in the end, people will not back you. They will rat on you, and your investigation will be picked to pieces. And then they're going to come around and hammer you and say, this was, you know, misinvestigation. This was misconduct in the investigative process. So that's the tough thing about this, is that everybody can agree 20 years later what the run-up was about, but people are really reluctant to look at an individual incident, whether it's Able Danger, January 6th, the Iowa explosion, and say, yes, this was the causation stream that led to that incident, and these are the failures that took place leading up to. We're wonderful at doing this with industrial processes. And so are the Japanese, and so are the Malaysians. We know how to manufacture things, and if there's a flaw, do reverse engineering and go back and figure out exactly where the problem occurred. But when it comes to politics, we don't want to do that. We don't want to do it for some reason.
So to that point, Lachlan, do you think at this point, put you in an uncomfortable position, but Lachlan, do you feel at this point your client is adequately protected to do two things? First, continue to be able to say the truth as he understands it without fear of reprisal. That is to say, do you think that Dan alluded to the Obama executive order that's supposed to protect whistleblowers, do you think that's adequate? And secondly, what comes next for your client relating to the next steps to actually get past the politics and cause some effect relating to the setting the record correct?
Yeah, I think he's in a position to survive any kind of negative attacks that come in the future. At this point, we really haven't seen any blowback from his testimony. Now, I think there was a political article that, kind of supported what the DOD was saying and kind of the minority's position. But we've taken control of the media. We've informed him of all the potential risks that come with testifying on this high level scale. And, one thing to note is that he was never subpoenaed through all this. This was all voluntarily done. He wanted to go up there, right? He wanted to expose the truth. He wanted to tell the facts how it is. And this goes back to something that was mentioned earlier about, the DOD wants to support themselves. They want to protect themselves from any kind of blowback. And so if the allegations are coming forward that it was the DOD's fault that some of these things happened and there was this delay, then obviously they're going to pick their witnesses, they're going to pick the documents they use, and they're going to craft the narrative that, oh, it was actually the National Guard's problem. But I think at this point, we haven't seen that blowback yet. There's always a chance, and we've warned Captain Nick about that. Now, going forward, I think Captain Nick wants to get away from this as much as he can, right? He doesn't want to be in the limelight. He doesn't want to continue to harp on these things. He's given his testimony. Now, I do think if they wanted him to give more testimony, he would be willing to give that. And that's just out of his principle of, I want to do the right thing. Let's get to the bottom of this. Let's get the facts out. But I think he wants to distance himself.
Well, I think that's good and bad. I mean, he's taken the oath, and clearly, Lachlan, he stood up and did what he believed his oath called him to do. And I appreciate the fact that he testified in uniform, which is a good sign that his chain of command was behind him, as in my case, the Army chain of command was behind me. But it doesn't change the fundamental fact that the events of that day have been characterized a certain way. As Dan said, the 9/11 issues I had to testify to, there was a narrative, and people on the political class were happy with that narrative because it got the responsibility off them. Right now, your client's basically saying, yeah, that narrative is not quite so accurate. And it really goes, like you point out, there's been a minority effort to go to Politico to put out this counter narrative. So we're running out of time here for this part of the show, and we'll bring you back for a little bit, the second part. But my last question is, do you really believe when the narrative is this important to preserve, your client's going to be left pristine based on what's at stake regarding his going against them? And this is not a political question. It sounds like it is, but it's not. This is one based on my practical understanding of how things work, as Dan and I talked about.
Really quickly on that, Tim's in good shape as long as the coalition stays together that is interested in his testimony, meaning the Guard coalition. If some fracture occurs within that, then that's where his, where he becomes endangered. And the problem we have, I have with that, is that the protections for whistleblowers are not set up under the assumption that you have to have some coalition in place to protect you. As you know, I did very well in Washington for about 15 years, and then all my cover retired. Clapper retired, Obama left, Chuck McCullough left, Rob Johnson left, and all of a sudden Dan, who'd been throwing brickbats at people for 15 years, had no senior cover, and I got hammered. So it's really about that coalition staying in place, and I think Tim has that around him now, but it's something he's always watching. I think it's benefited him that he is between several agencies. You see, Secret Service, the Guard, he was D.C. Guard, he's now Florida Guard. There are Army people who are interested in him. So I think that he's good as long as the coalition stays intact. And I have been very careful to remind the Congress of that, because in the end, he is now a congressional source, and it is job of the Speaker of the House to protect his sources. Okay, not just the committee chair. It is Johnson's job to protect his whistleblowers. He is the head of that branch, and that's what people need to be looking to going forward.
So, and yeah, full disclosure, I think you knew this, Dan. Denny Hastert spoke to me and asked me to do what I did regarding speaking on the record to testify. And at the time, the protections did not exist. The coalition, which helped me, it still exists. I had Judicial Watch and Bob Barr, former Congressman Bob Barr, the Reagan guys, former Secretary of the Army, Marsh, John Layman, Chris Layman, all tried to jump in to help out, protect me, which they did. And then Elaine, what's her name, over at POGO. You know what I'm talking about, Dan. Over
yeah,
at POGO, Project and Government Oversight.
Yes.
They jumped in to help out. So you know, there is a coalition available.
Daniel Bryant
jumped in. And I think we had a good group. Yeah. So it was a good. So,
well,
anyway,
you had,
we got to take a break. We're halfway through the show. Yeah. What's that, Dan?
I was going to say you had support within the Army. You had stars on your side.
So the Army, yeah, full disclosure again, the Army did give me permission. Terry Ford, the deputy G2 of the Army, plus the General Kimmons, the G2 of the Army, and several others were allowed me to do what I did. As a matter of fact, Dan, I think I told you this on the record. I was over on Capitol Hill visiting Congressman Kurt Weldon, asking, I was attached as an Army guy to a Navy activity. Dan, you know who it is. It was Deep Blue, the internal think tank, Navy think tank. And because there were prohibitions about the Navy think tank guys going talking to members of Congress, they said, oh, you're an Army guy. You don't have to follow our rules. Go talk to Congress and ask for money. It's like, okay, what do I care? You know, it's not. So off I go to the Hill, and man, they start asking, oversight folks start asking all these questions. And next thing you know, it's like, you're telling us stuff we didn't know. So I go back, I'm literally outside the Pentagon. I call Terry Ford, the number three guy in Army intelligence. And I said, Terry, they're asking me really hard questions about Able Danger. And he knew what Able Danger was. And Dan, I was very proud of the Army at that point. He said two things. He said, Tony, you need to do two things. Tell them what they want to know and tell them the truth. That was it. That was the guidance I got from the Army, and the rest is history. So there you go. And it was I didn't understand what that guidance meant at the moment. I do now. But man, it was a great adventure. So anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with part two of The Hard Truth, Tony Schaefer, right after this short break. Hey, everybody. Tony Schaefer here. You know, they say every dark cloud has a silver lining, right? Well, today I'm going to prove it. Rising political and economic uncertainties, increasing market volatility. This flight to safety has pushed precious metals such as gold and silver up in recent years. To help protect my audience, Swiss America has a very special introductory offer, walking silver half dollars, at an amazing price of just $13.50 each delivered. That's right, $13.50 each delivered. Limit 250 per customer while supplies last. Call 800-289-2646. Again, 800-289-2646. Put a silver lining in your portfolio now. Call 800-289-2646 or online at SwissAmerica.com. Again, online, SwissAmerica.com or call 800-289-2646 and tell them Tony Schaefer gave you the number.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The buildup of spike proteins is dangerous to your health. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body, removing the spike proteins, allowing your body to repair from within. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill, it's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is X-L-E-A-R.com.
Well, the year 2024 must be the year of the Patriot, and AmericaOutloud.news will equip you with all the information you need to give new meaning to the words Patriot Act. For our actions always ultimately define our words. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Hey, this is the Hard Truth, Tony Schaefer, Part 2. Show powered by 6 Hour, Never Settle. I had a choice of what I carried in combat. I always carried the best. I carried a P228, which is the M11. I have an M11 now, so I recommend you carry Never Settle. It's always something that is a tool and necessary for your protection. If you want to be protected well, I suggest you get a SIG and be protected well. So, and also, we're sponsored by Swiss America. Call to get a free copy of their information regarding cash, the Super War in Cash, the Cash Newsletter, 800-289-2646. Also, They also have a silver dollar, a walking Liberty half dollar offer. I think you need to check into as well. Same phone number, 800-289-2646. Tell them Tony Schaefer sent you to check into what you can do to strengthen your portfolio and strengthen your family's finances in tough times. So we're continuing part two with I want to get the names right because, you know, Dan Meyer is easy. So my friend Dan Meyer, former Inspector General, now helping Captain Nick, and Lachlan McKinnon. I don't know if I'm getting that right. Is that right?
McKinnon.
I apologize. Don't sue me.
Not McKinley.
Just kidding. Uh-huh. That's a joke. Come on, lighten up. And so we are joined by part two of the show by the august Elizabeth Breckenkamp, actress extraordinaire, a former colleague of mine, a public affairs officer. So Elizabeth, welcome back as to the show. And of course, running the boards and ever present, the acclaimed Chris Gordani, who's now trying to put together a prisoner special. So we could talk about that some other time. But
August, if she's August, aren't I September?
To get someone who's not dead from the cast on there, yours. Yeah. So
we're working on that.
You are September.
That's right.
We're working on it. So yeah, people not being dead is a good thing, right? Alive people. That's an important part of broadcast media, is having people who can actually speak.
It's a requirement to vote.
Speaking
of
speaking, so we're going to go another 10 minutes. We're going to go another 10 minutes on this. So, Lachlan, you were talking about kind of the benefits of your client being protected and your law firm. I don't want to say bad things about lawyers. I had a disagreement with my lawyer. I don't want to say his name because we had to actually go after him because I think he had not done as good a job as he could in representing me and my interests. But with that said, it seems like so far you guys have done a good job in a very complex environment. So two things, and this is your chance to kind of get out there and talk about this. If a whistleblower feels so inclined, how would they approach you guys and what would they have to know to go forward to have you guys look at what they would want to say?
Yeah. So I mean, the first thing we do is we get the facts, right? We get, bring us the evidence. What have you disclosed? When did you disclose it? To whom did you disclose it? What happened after? What was the reprisal taken against you? Mm-hmm. And so we work with the client and go through all these elements and we lay it out to them, right? These are what you have to show. Do you have the evidence to match everything? And so that's what we do first with our clients. They come in. We make sure that they can at least show the different elements of the whistleblower protection. And we go for it. And we'll help them with flushing out all the elements and reviewing their evidence and seeing what's missing, what needs to be added, et cetera. So that's how we work with our clients when whistleblowers come to us first.
Hey, Tony, a comment about that.
Yeah.
I do these cases fundamentally different than my competitors in the Washington bullpen. Coming out of the federal government as a former federal investigator, I think a lot of Washington lawyers spend too much time on nice legal briefs at the beginning of the process. Yeah. And the last thing an attorney investigator needs at OSC or an IG is, you know, erudite discussions of the law. That's not what they do. As you know, it goes up to the craven agency counsels on the top floor, and then they just chop and dice everything up because they don't have to bill by the hour. They got all the time in the world. So what I've taught Lachlan and the national security team I work with at Tully Rinke is that you need to develop the facts. And part of that is being very candid up front with the client. What do you have in the way of facts? And what can we reasonably expect to get out of whatever pipeline we're going to launch you into, whether it's OSC, whether it's an IG, whether it's an MSPB case? And there's a certain political calculation to that. Some IGs are safer to handle an investigation responsibly than others. I spend a lot of my time during the day finding out, you know, who's corrupt and who's not corrupt in Washington, because frankly, there's people in both camps. So it's a fact-based process. And Tony, the process I use now, I developed on your case, because every time I went to a meeting, every time I went to a meeting, it was huge. There were like 35 people working on your case. And I get in there and they would all rearrange the facts. Nothing was the same from the last meeting we had. And I went to my boss, Richard Thornton Race, great guy. You know, he had a little challenge in the end, but he was a really great guy, former Secret Service agent. And he was laughing after I had gone through one of these, you know, getting punched around sessions. And I said, what am I doing wrong? And he said, it's always this way with the intelligence community. I hate it because they all change their mind intentionally, trying to figure out where they're all going to line up. So that's why we come in and we do a reprisal matrix. We do a chronology and we'll do a complaint, which will have some law in it, but the law comes later. And basically what I'm training are sharp and aggressive investigators.
So Dan, what you're saying is that you've got to put together an entire battle plan to assess the battlefield, to include good guys, bad guys, centers of gravity, and then have that prepared to execute as a matter of legal a legal tool to help navigate. And it sounds like almost going through like a field of icebergs. You got to figure out which ones are the big icebergs, which are really big below, and you got to watch out for those. And others, yeah, they're kind of growlers. You can kind of just knock them out, but you got to really be precise in how you move the law firm and your client forward. Is that an accurate kind of summary of what you have to do?
Yeah, this is basically political law, Tony, and I don't like it. I don't like that. This is the way it's evolved over the last 40 years, but the stakes are too high for politics to stay out of this, which is why sometimes I will tell a client as we're doing a consult, don't tell my partners I said this, but I don't think you should retain and I don't think you should go forward. I think your wife should deliver the baby in 3 months, and I think you should focus on the family and then write a really, you know, can-kicking book in about, you know, 4 or 5 years. I've said that to people, not too many, but I've said it to a few. It's not always the fight you want to pick. And this is the challenge, Tony. In any crisis, whether it's Able Danger, the Iowa explosion, 9/11, January 6th, the people who often do the best are the ones who say nothing at all. They just go on with their life. Like, and I hate to be anti-German. I come from a German-American family, but they're good Germans in air quotes. They turn their eyes away from the misconduct within their government, and somehow they don't feel sleazy at the end of the day when they do that. And that's the majority of people. And that's a lot of our neighbors, Tony. That's a lot of our relatives, frankly. And then a few people.
I've seen it.
The warriors at Thermopylae basically pile into the pass, pull their sabers out, and get ready to take on the Persians. And it's blood sport for everybody else watching it, including a lot of those people who say nothing at all. But the challenge is, unless you have the Karen Silkwoods or the Daniel Ellsbergs, the Serpicos, that's a generation before us, you don't get the shock. You don't get the, oh, my God, something went wrong. I did a meet and greet with the new special counsel this past week. They had cookies and punch for us to meet with Hampton. And he asked us for our, you know, critique of the last 4 or 5 special counsels. I've been around for a few of them. And I said to him, I said, don't be afraid to lose. Okay. Yeah. If you go into court and you've got the right cause and you've got the right reading of the law, and the judge decides against you, then that's just a signal to Congress to come in and kick that judge's can, because Congress is Article 1 of the Constitution. It's the first for a reason, because it is the most important branch. Yeah. And that's what happens, is people get afraid. You know, IGs are practically, you can't get them out of their offices. You need dynamite to blow them out of their offices. And they could be saying great things left and right, as they did for many years under George W. and under Obama. Our IGs were out front. And then you know what happened. That first couple of months of Donald Trump's term, they all got scared because he threatened to fire them all. Michael Horwitz stepped in to protect him. But they got scared because they have mortgages. They have kids going to Ivy League institutions. You know, they've got, you know, expenses they got to cover. And so they might not go out on the limb to do what Mr. Reyes used to tell us, do the right thing. I always hated when I heard that, do the right thing, because they made you define the right thing. And if you picked the wrong thing, they would tell you, well, that wasn't the right thing. But they didn't tell you what the right thing was in the first place.
Well, that's right. So, Dan, I appreciate the fact that during the time I did not know you as a friend, you did the right thing. And I think that's the common thread. I like to believe that's why we're friends now, because I respected you had to do your job to investigate me. I just wanted the truth. I was like, you know, you can go look. Yes, did I do stupid things like give females full body massages in combat? Oh, yeah, I did. It was a lot of fun. I would do it again. But that doesn't change. It doesn't diminish what I'm saying to be true or false. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, I did these things. It was fun. So, and that's the other thing we could probably talk about, but I don't have time now to talk about the fact that they will go after character flaws and, you know, someone doing, being human is part of trying to diminish that individual. What they're saying is an interest. But anyway, we'll leave it there for now. Lachlan, Dan of Tully Rickney Law Firm, we appreciate you guys coming on. I'd like to have you come back when things kind of resolve themselves over the summer, maybe in the fall, to continue this discussion, because we didn't get into a lot of other details we could. So, Dan, thank you for being here. Lachlan, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Tony.
Excellent.
Do good work.
Thank you.
That'd be great. A sequel would be fantastic.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Tim, actually, Tony, I was going to say, Tim, you were on Tony's show, but Tony, you were on Tim Pool's show recently. That sounds pretty cool.
So, yeah, I'm still recovering. I don't know if people can see my bloody eyes from driving all night. I actually drove. We were up until late. We were up until after 11 doing his show. Basically, I knew it was long, but it was like really long. So Tim breaks the show down into a couple different pieces. Most of it's free, which is great. I interact with the audience. A lot of folks watched. For those who have not watched, I encourage you to go out and watch. It was a fun discussion. A lot of topicality stuff. A lot of stuff we talk about here, we talked about with a different audience. So it was good. And, hopefully I'll be asked back. But Tim was cool. I enjoyed. I was the second guest in his new studio. If you look at the video, the new studio is, I can't say where it's at. But it's not in North Dakota. I'll say that.
That's somewhere. It's not in LA. Are you saying it's not in LA or San Francisco?
Yeah. People do speak with accents, and they do take naps. No, they don't really take naps. Maybe they should. They probably should
Mexico
take naps.
City, then. Okay.
Just saying. Anyway. So, but no, it was a great experience. And then I went ahead and drove back. I will say the number of hours so people will be curious. 5 hours. Back to my house in North Carolina from wherever this location was at. So
wherever this was.
Wherever.
So now everybody's going to get out a map and draw 5 hours.
That's right. It's like circular. Circular. Yeah. It's like, we're 5 hours. So
that's productive. There we go.
Yeah.
One thing I like about Tim Pool, and his show is very good. He's very, very informed. He loves to pull out good news stories.
You got to keep up with him.
But I like the fact that he brands well. The beanie—it's such a small thing, but that became his trademark, and I'm sure that was a big help in him branding himself. Fantastic.
You know why he wears the beanie, right?
No, I do not.
Because he's like that Martian from Mars Attacks underneath. You know, if you take it off, there's like a clear clear thing of, you know, just his brain
It's really unpleasant to look at.
But I'm told. You know, I don't know
for this. For the same reason people ask me to wear a paper bag, so I get that. Okay.
We do not
have much time left, but what we do have time for is Tony's takes.
Tony's take.
That's right. So, Tony, I want your take, and Elizabeth, I want your take on some of this cool stuff here. First, as we are taping, Wednesday, a $95 billion bundled foreign aid package has been passed and signed by President Joe Biden. 95 billion smackers. It was a bundled, as nobody wanted, except for the Democrats, a bundled set of money going to Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and a TikTok ban kind of thrown in there as well, a potential one. What's your take?
So let's start with the TikTok ban. Apparently, the Democrats have been buying stocks in Facebook. So, you know, they don't want Mark Zucker to be have competition. I think that's where he's like, okay, where's our money going? Because this is all about money. You know, remember Trump wanted to ban TikTok before. Remember that? Back when, freedom of speech. But now no, I'm with it's changed. So as Dan was saying, follow the money. So I'm betting that someone got to them and said, oh, you know, we'll give you some money, because that's why they were protecting TikTok before, his money. It's like whoever, the Democrats have no ethics, Chris. They're going to go with whoever pays them the most. Just saying.
Well, yep. That's their MO. Yes.
Yeah. So, and then on the aid, I mean, I think they snuck in an appropriation in all those bills for Joe Biden to have unlimited lifetime supplies of both Viagra and Depends. You make of that as you want.
Diapers. Yes. He's going to need Depends for the rest of his life.
Oh, there we go.
You know, with a doctor wife.
Yeah. Oh. So I think that's a joke in there somewhere. What comes from Depends and Viagra? Just asking, because I don't know. Maybe Joe Biden knows. I don't know.
Oh, well, I still think you Joe Biden's the Joe Dr. Biden. I still think is the Woodrow Wilson of America right now, or the present day.
Oh,
anyway, yeah. Having Wilson? Said Woody? Woodrow, yeah, that's right. Because Woodrow Wilson, Woody Wilson, had Viagra. There we go. Wilson. Perfect.
Oh,
wow, that's you got me on that
one.
Oh
boy, here we go.
Tony is brilliant. That's why we call this Tony's Takes and not Chris's Takes. Tony, I want your take on this one.
Keep going.
And you have to hear the lineup for this. According to the Gateway Pundit, a group of prominent Trump-hating media commentators, I guess that's kind of redundant, they've been meeting weekly for 2 years to strategize on how to bring down Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. You might not be surprised at this, but I'm going to give you this lineup. But here's part of the lineup here. Ready?
Yeah.
Billy Crystal, not the
funny one.
Not the comedian, no.
Well, he is funny, but not in a funny way.
Yep. Andrew Weissman, another one. Lawrence Tribe, member of the Biden Obama tribe and Harvard nutcase.
Didn't he have like a group called Tribe or something? Wasn't he part of a music?
I think it's Quest.
Quest,
a tribe
that's right.
Called Quest. There we go.
That's what it is. I was
George Conway. And we all know about his problems at home.
And hemorrhoids too.
Right. A deep stater named John Dean. Remember that guy from the Nixon, the Watergate?
I do.
The weasel, the rat.
My friend G. Gordon Liddy, before he passed, hated him. I think he would have killed him had he had the chance.
Liddy was not a rat. John Dean was.
That's
that
right.
Guy is a rat, and
no,
he made a
I've
career
heard
out of being one.
From Gordon directly about how much he hated John Dean. Just saying.
No, I don't blame John him Dean. For that. And here's another one for you all. You, one of your favorite guys, Jeffrey Toobin, the infamous CNN commentator. And we don't know. And basically, I wouldn't want to be on a Zoom with that guy anyway, for obvious reasons. Tony, what's your take on this lineup?
So, well, I think let's start with the first, because it's the best, of course, because I think he's going on one of the new networks, News Nation. His new show is Lubin with Toobin. So I think it's going to be very
oh
well
God.
Taken. It's going to be fun. A lot of lotions. She puts the lotion on Toobin. Her hair. Isn't that what was that thing from Hannibal Lecter? It's like.
Puts the lotion on its skin.
That's
the hose
right.
Again.
So,
well, I think somebody's putting lotion on a hose, right?
That's right. It'll be 30 minutes of Jeffrey Toobin giving advice on a variety of lotions. Just saying. And then
they have devolved just so low.
We're killing.
They don't care how low they go.
They'll be laying things out with lotion as he talks about Trump. Just saying. That'll be quite the show. And so he'll have
really
people like
killing him, they would.
No, yeah. Then he'll bring all these guys on to talk about legal issues and the length of a predicate, if you know what I mean.
Well, how long will it take before John Dean rents them out?
Well, John Dean is I think John misses prison. And when you miss prison that much, you do everything you can to kind of ingratiate yourself to the federal system. So I think it's just a matter of time before he, you know. If he can't get put away for, you know, basically planning treason, because I think this is all, can I say the word RICO here? This is all RICO in the open. By the way, I mean, Trump's being persecuted for election interference in RICO. Chris, this is what this is. All of this is RICO. This is
That's
all
what it
RICO.
Is.
This is all interfering with election with, you know, with some level of lube and lotion. But it doesn't make it legal. I'm just saying, so.
It also shows us what they're really doing to the people as well, lube and lotion, if you will.
That's right. There's a meme. Yeah, there's a meme on the internet I don't want to show because it's like nasty, but it says it has someone bent over doing things, and it says, hey, this feels like something sex, not democracy. Just saying. So, you know.
that gives another that's another definition for the deep state, if you will.
Oh,
that's pretty bad.
Oh,
that's
right. Mm. Well, during the Cold War, I don't know if you knew this, Chris, Elizabeth may remember this from the airland battle era. Did you know that one of the principles of airland battle is deep penetration in the softer areas? Did you know that? That's doctrine.
That sounds about right.
I'm not kidding. I'm not joking.
That sounds about
even
right.
No, I am.
On that note.
Oh boy.
Oh my. See, well, it is our job to inform, educate, and entertain. So
and entertain. The show.
That's
it's
right.
Got to be entertaining.
That's right. So,
we'll be less entertaining than the Tubin show, but still will be entertaining.
I don't know. There's something about patchouli and lotion that we just don't have. Maybe he does. I don't know.
Hey, yo.
Maybe.
Patchouli.
All right. So this has been another literally fun-filled episode of The Hard Truth, mm-hmm. Tony Schaefer. Obviously, we Love want you to come him. Back again. Be sure and check out our sponsors, Six Sour and Swiss America. Swiss America, 800-289-2646. Check out their book on War on Cash, Secret War on Cash. You need to be prepared. And, of course, order their Walking Liberty Half Dollars, 800-289-2646, 800-289-2646. Check them out. You need to prepare for the worst case. We want to help you do that. So, anyway, signing off for Elizabeth Breckenkamp and Chris Cordani. We'll be back again next week with another episode of The Hard Truth. See you then.